The Weekly Connect
on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. Yes, this is the programme that talks to you if you're blind or partially sighted and you have something to say about living life with sight loss. This is the very programme you want to listen to. Every week we hear from you and we hear about all your different stories that you've got to tell us. We've got some really interesting ones to get through this week, including hearing from blind international dressage rider, singer-songwriter and author Verity Smith about her lifelong love affair with riding, her Paralympic ambitions and the challenge of a guide dog who likes to roll in the dirt. Oh yeah, we've all been there. Also this week, Mark McCree, the Senior Manager of Libraries and Heritage at RNIB, shares an exciting nomination for the charity library. And we meet Freddie Cannell, the 12-year-old who has raised thousands for guide dogs and who is hosting an art auction in Sheffield. That, plus a lot more, coming up on this week's The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
But first, it was a weekend not to forget.
It was a fantastic weekend and very well organised, and we're looking forward to the next one.
I've had a fantastic time with wonderful people.
The staff here are superb.
10 out of 10.
What's been your favourite thing?
Everything. Can't fold anything.
I've enjoyed the weekend. Everything has been my favourite thing.
I've really enjoyed meeting new people. It's been a marvellous weekend and everybody's been wonderful.
Had a lovely time and it's been absolutely wonderful. Can't fault anything.
So what was so great? Well, it was a fantastic weekend, as they say, organised by Peter Bennett, who is blind himself. He is one of RNIB's connectors, a volunteer of RNIB, who set up a weekend at Windermere Manor. And we're going to be hearing later about the weekend and how it brought many blind and partially sighted people together and spurred them on to create local groups in their area, something you might be interested in. That is coming up. We'll hear from Peter Bennett, and we're going to hear from some of the voices you heard there talking about how wonderful the weekend was and why they went along. That on the way here on the Weekly Connect a little bit later. But first, we are going to meet someone who just has got so many strings to her bow. Here's Sophia Asif with more.
I'd like to welcome international dressage rider, singer-songwriter and author, and all-round good egg, Verity Smith, to the Weekly Connect. Hello, Verity.
Hello, Sophia.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show today, Verity. Now, I understand that when you were still quite young, you were diagnosed with Stargardt's.
I actually started to lose my sight at the age of 8. But luckily for me, I started riding at the age of 3. So I fell in love with horses long, long, long before my eyesight started to deteriorate and got a look in, if you like. And then as I started to go blind, I remember sitting in Moorfields and they said to me, well, you know, said to my parents, you'll never be able to drive. And I actually turned around and said, that's okay, my horse can see for me. So I've always had a very strong connection with horses. They've always been, in a sense, my release from my disability. They became the means through which I could ride the storm of my blindness. Because when I was on the horse, I felt free. I could move without consequence. I could charge around like every other kid. They were my sanctuary during this time. When I was 14 and I was actually registered blind, the show jumping was getting quite treacherous. And I didn't want to just ride around the lanes on a pony. I wanted to compete on equal terms with people. I wanted to find a sport that I could do without having to compromise my ability because of my disability. And I discovered a sport called dressage. And I was very fortunate. I represented Great Britain when I was 18 in the World Dressage Para Championships, which I was incredibly proud of because it was a very big flag to wear for a very, in my mind, small talent. But it was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant experience. And the wonderful thing about dressage, it combines the two passions in my life, both music and horses. Because dressage, when you get to a certain level, you get to do what we call a freestyle, which is where you choose your music to suit your horse, and you basically get to boogie. It's basically like Strictly Come Dressage, with a bunch of judges who aren't quite as funny as Craig Revel Horwood.
Do you do the grooming?
I do everything. My darling guide dog guides me and the horse from the field to the stables, and he can load the horse onto the lorry. And
then this is Offa, is it?
Arthur is my... I wish I could find a man as well-trained. I have to say, I would marry him tomorrow. He's an absolute darling, Arthur. He is just a big black ball of love. He flies all over the world, and he's learnt in France, for example, that the traffic comes from another direction. Without him, my life wouldn't be possible. I wouldn't be able to leave the house. You know, he's absolutely amazing.
Does he work with you with the horses?
He does. So Uffa and Kit, my horse is called Kit, are very, very good buddies. And Uffa actually guides me and Kit in from the paddock. And he can also load Kit onto the lorry, which I'm sure is not in the guide dog handbook, and guide dogs probably have a hernia if they heard that. And Kit adores him. They share water buckets, they share carrots. He always sneaks off and eats horse poop.
He has a little taste for it, does he?
Oh, yes. He loves his veggie burgers. And he's very particular. I mean, he will actually go to certain horses' boxes, certain horses' stables, and go, "Ugh, no, I'm not having that flavour." And move on to the next one. I'm like, really? Cordon bleu poop?
He doesn't have a thing for dog poo as well, does he?
No, thank God. Vegetarian poop, cow poop, horse poop. Poop, sheep poop. It's hysterical because guide dog said to me when I got my first dog, she may like to roll in fox poo. If she does, do not despair. It's rather smelly. What you need to do is put ketchup on it and that gets rid of the smell. And I thought, a blind person with a bottle of ketchup in your apartment squirting the dog, who's then going to run around like a nutter and basically make red every, and you can't see to clear it up. I'm like, I'll just give her a bath. Looks like I've massacred somebody in my house.
What a brilliant piece of advice.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Did you try it?
I did try it once, and unfortunately, I had a white sofa. So my mum came out and said, "Darling, has there been an accident in the house? Because there's, like, red streaks all down the side of the sofa." The other priceless piece of advice that guide dogs gave me was, because Kay, my first dog, she was brilliant, but she was a bit rubbish at recall. Mm. I used to call her, and she wouldn't come. And, of course, I couldn't see where she was, and she had bells on and stuff, but she kind of figured if she stood still, I couldn't hear the bells. And they said to me, I called them, I said, "We have a bit of an issue with recall." And they said, "The best thing you can do is hide behind a tree." And I said, "Well, that would be lovely if I could find a bloody tree." You know, I'm blind. So I found myself in the middle of Hyde Park, sort of huddled behind a sapling. I mean, she could so see me. It was the size of a toothpick, this tree. It had obviously just been newly planted. I'm like, "Found a tree. Hide, hide." You know, I'm like, she can't see me. And if they can't see you, apparently, they'll come. Well, of course, she was just like, "Why is Mum standing behind a twig?"
It sounds like you two had great fun together. And actually, it must be great fun just being part of that bigger dressage team. I mean, they did such fantastic work during the London 2012 Olympics, bringing dressage riding to the British public.
We have the best dressage team for able-bodied, and we have the best dressage para team. We're the best in the world. You know, we should be incredibly proud. And I think Charlotte did so much in 2012. It was a golden time. They stole the show. I mean, it was so beautiful. And I think it brought so many people into the sport, which was great. It was a beautiful, beautiful Olympics, which sadly I didn't attend.
Yes, so tell us what happened with that. I believe that you had a difficult year leading up to the 2012 Olympics.
I had a terrible year in 2011. We all have speed bumps on our road, if you like, and I hit a bit of a mega pothole. My competition horse was put to sleep because he had cancer, which was awful. And then 3 weeks after that, my darling guide dog Kay, who was retired but then 12, she was put to sleep. And then about 2 weeks after that, we had a terrible car crash. A lorry driver fell asleep and just drove head-on into our car. And I had back injuries, so I wasn't able to ride at all for a year.
Yeah, that must have been such a difficult time for you.
Oh, it was terrible, I have to say. I think when so many things like that happen, even though you've worked so, so hard to represent your country and your country, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance, you know. But the reality is, you know, there are so many things against me at that point that somebody somewhere is saying, "Take a break, kid." There was nothing I could have done in any of those events to change them. I was incredibly proud of everybody, but very, very sad not to be participating. But from that year, I wrote a book, and then I also wrote a theatre show. So in a way, although I didn't do 2012, and although 2011 was a bit of a dream shatterer, it's really, really important to sort of try and think outwardly, even if you can't see the beautiful blue sky and you can't see that, hey, it's a gorgeous day today, which most people's spirits would be lifted by, I think it's very important to keep a hold of yourself inside and say, come on, there's got to be something good that's going to come out of this. It can't all be doom and gloom.
So, Verity, you're training at the moment, I understand.
We're training very, very hard at the moment because last year we managed to get, we did a media campaign called Beat the Blindfold, which was to get the blindfold rule for dressage riders lifted. And we succeeded, which is absolutely brilliant.
So just for listeners who aren't fully aware of that, that was a stipulation by the Olympic Committee that Paralympic riders had to wear blindfolds.
This is so dangerous because you're dealing as a rider with 600-700 kilos of muscle and mind and flight instinct. And that horse relies on your confidence. They're unpredictable. For people like myself, who do have a little bit of light and dark, you know, that is the balance of our senses. We live with that 24/7. And to then take that away for such a short period of time, it's incredibly dangerous when you're dealing with an animal like a horse. And, of course, equestrian sport is the only Olympic sport which involves another creature. So, thankfully, the International Federation and the Paralympic Committee saw sense. It took a while, but they have lifted the blindfold. And it's changed and opened the doors for a lot of riders that stopped riding things. So I'm really proud of them. They moved it. So no more blindfolds. Everyone can ride, not looking like they've been kidnapped.
And how is this going to change things for you then? Does it mean that there are more competitions that you can enter? How does it work for perhaps the next Paralympics?
So I refuse to compete with a blindfold. So I've only been competing able-bodied for the past few years. And now, from January this year, I'll continue to compete able-bodied, but I'll also compete in paras. So it's fantastic. It basically means I've got double trouble when it comes to competition schedule. We can work in and train in parallel for the two. So that's basically our plan. And then what I'd love to do is go to the World Championships next year in America, which is 2018. And then Tokyo, 2020, sushi, here we come. Touch wood, everyone being healthy and no injuries.
Absolutely, yes. Keep all crossed for that. When you're not dressage, writing, singer-songwriting, what do you do with your spare time?
For me, I love being with my friends, I love socialising, walking. I often go and listen to concerts, and I love travelling. Before I got comfortable with being blind, as in I got used to it and I learned how to navigate my senses, I was always a bit overwhelmed when I went somewhere completely new. Now I love it. I love travelling. I love different cultures, different smells. And on a regular day, the best thing for me is a quiet walk with my darling doggy.
Sounds like you really have managed to get yourself to a place in life where all of the things that you really relish and that really kind of are meaningful to you are just built into the existence that you have. It's a fantastic balance, it sounds like.
There are certain things I know I can't do, you know, and I wouldn't bother trying. I know if I want to go clothes shopping, I'm quite wise to take somebody with me who can actually see what I'm buying. You know? I mean, there are certain things that, you know, you just need your buddies with you to tell you the truth kind of thing.
It's but always good to have a second opinion, isn't it?
Always good to have an honest one. I've worked this out. Never ask a shop assistant because they want the sale. They'll tell you, you look great in that, and you walk out looking like Mr. Blobby. Not a good look. My life is very full and it's very exciting in a lot of ways. But one thing I've realized is I have to plan and I have to make time. Everything takes a bit longer when you can't see. But I think if you get used to making that accommodation for yourself, anything is possible.
Verity, thank you for talking to us. It's been so lovely to hear about your life and to hear how you go about making the most of it.
My pleasure.
That was Verity Smith speaking there to Sophia Asif. Thank you, Verity, for sharing your story. And that is exactly what we want you to do. If you have something you'd like to tell us about something you've done, and, you know, you might not think it's particularly amazing, and you might not necessarily be a singer, songwriter, author, all those things, but, you know, you might have done something interesting, and perhaps you want to tell us about it, or perhaps your friend has, and you think that perhaps they should tell their story to The Weekly Connect. Email in, do tell us, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk, and your voice could be on this programme. Now, to Windermere Manor in the Lake District, and a beautiful location for a fantastic event, as suggested by the people who went there. Very recently, our own RNIB community reporters, Danielle Colcombe and Natasha Marseille, went along to speak to some of the people who turned up at the most recent RNIB Connect event.
Hi everyone, we're here at Windermere Manor and we've got the host with us now for a quick interview. So do you just want to tell us who you are?
My name's Peter Bennett and I live in South Shields in the northeast of England.
And what made you want to plan this weekend?
Well, blind and partially sighted people were telling me during 2016 that there wasn't much happening with RNIB. They were frustrated that the forums had ceased and the Connect community hadn't got underway. And so I just wanted to try to make sure that something happened for blind and partially sighted people in the northeast, because I'm passionate about Connect. I think it's a great concept and I really want it to be successful.
What made you decide to come to Windermere Manor then?
Well, last year we had a trip to Windermere Manor in April and it was very successful and people wanted to come back. But that was the only thing that happened in 2016. And so I thought, well, if people had enjoyed it last year, let's do something similar again. But let's put the focus on some of the issues around, you know, spreading the word. What is Connect and how can we connect more effectively? And what can we give back to it and what do we want to get out of it?
So you talk about the Connect themes and that's one of the things we talked about yesterday. We had some Connect sessions. Do you feel like the response was well received about Connect?
I think there was a lot of positivity around the room in relation to Connect. I think blind and partially sighted people from the northeast expressed some of their frustrations too, which I think is a fair thing because, you know, at the end of the day, this is our community. This is their community. And we need to hear what they have to say. And, you know, we have to be responsive to what they have to say. But the good thing about this weekend is that it has been led purely by blind and partially sighted people. There's been a lot of blind and partially sighted people here with their supporters and they have had their voices heard.
And certainly, and I was part of the discussions yesterday and I found it very interesting, you know, to hear about people's experiences and what it is they want from Connect, but also what they can give back. I think that was a really positive spin on the day. And as you said, it is about the community. What would you say maybe are the highlights from the weekend and what do you see Connect achieving going forward from this?
I think there's been a lot of highlights over the weekend. It's really difficult to pick any one particular thing out other than, you know, the whole weekend has been about blind and partially sighted people coming from all corners of the northeast of England and others from the northwest of England who wanted to join in with us and come to find out what we're all about, which has been absolutely fantastic. So I think when we've been meeting socially in the bar, on the dance floor, in discussion groups, over meal times, whatever it's been, blind and partially sighted people and their supporters have been connecting all of the time. That has been the highlight for me. And I think one little story yesterday, I was talking to one person who actually got the last place. She was on the waiting list and somebody cancelled at the beginning of this week. She was registered blind within the last 4 years. She's a guide dog user and she's made so many friends here. She's going to be going up to Berwick in a few weeks' time and she's making arrangements already to meet up with some of our people that have been here this weekend, and I think that's just absolutely tremendous.
Brilliant. And you can see the positive effects that coming together and community spirit's having on everybody. I think everyone's taking that away from the weekend. If you could take one sort of message away from the weekend, what would it be?
I think that people really do want to connect with one another. It doesn't matter whether they do it in their own homes, in small groups, whether they do it in their own small communities, whether they do it linked to societies across the region, or whether they want to come together on a region-wide basis, which is something that I heard very clearly yesterday. People don't want to just be talking amongst themselves. They want to meet other blind and partially sighted people from across the region and from across the country. They want to share ideas, they want to know what other people are doing, they want to replicate that themselves, and they just want to be part of the community. They want to share experiences and learn from one another.
So for anyone listening to this and they're thinking, oh, I would love to do a Windermere Manor weekend, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I'd say the Windermere Manor Hotel is an absolutely fantastic venue. It's warm, it's welcoming, the staff are absolutely fantastic. It's in a beautiful setting. And they're so well geared up to the needs of blind and partially sighted people. But that doesn't mean to say that you couldn't be doing this kind of event elsewhere in the country. But certainly to bring blind and partially sighted people together for a weekend like this, where you're living together, where you're socialising together, you're talking together, you're part of discussion groups together, it's just an absolutely amazing experience. And I think everybody here has found it really rewarding.
And for those people who are feeling that maybe they don't have enough confidence to kind of make the first steps in their communities, as a connector yourself, what would you say to those people?
Well, just get involved, really, because we've got people here this weekend who have never been part of any of these kind of discussions before, and blind and partially sighted people who haven't been active within RNIB, haven't been active within societies or other groups who've found the whole experience truly valuable. And people, you know, it's just amazing to see shy, timid people up on the dance floor, bopping around and having a great time, but talking to one another and so relaxed in the company of one another. That's just such a good way to improve confidence of blind and partially sighted people, so that they, feeling comfortable with one another, they can begin to talk about those things that really matter to them.
Well, on behalf of Connect, thank you for planning the event, and I'm sure everyone is thrilled and had a lovely time, so thank you very much.
We particularly enjoyed the wine tasting, so that was thank you for that.
Thanks for teaching me your dance moves.
Yes, thank you very much.
Now, dance moves and wine tasting, eh? A hard-working weekend for Danielle and Natasha. Thank you to both of you for doing that and for recording that interview with Peter Bennett. Great to hear from Peter there on how to set up these events. And we'll be hearing later from two ladies who went to Windermere Manor that weekend to find out not just about the events themselves and to meet other blind and partially sighted people, but also to find out how to create their own events in local areas. And that is something which I know a lot of you out there are very keen to do. So stick around and listen to that interview. Very revealing and very interesting. So that is on the way. But first, let's go to Sophia Asif, who has got some book news for us.
The British Book Awards is an event to celebrate the journey from the author's head to the reader's hand, and this year is the second consecutive year that the RNIB Library has been shortlisted. It's in the category of bringing books to readers and is nominated for Library of the Year. Mark McCree, the Senior Manager for Libraries and Heritage, joins me on the line from Peterborough. Hello Mark, and congratulations on the nomination.
Hello, and thank you.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what this means for the RNIB Library?
Well, it's a huge deal because these awards are the most prestigious in the book calendar. We were shortlisted last year, which was a real privilege, but we have repeated the feat this year, which is fantastic news.
Is there anything, do you think, that the RNIB Library is doing differently that's meant that two nominations in a row?
Well, I think the 2015 shortlisting was predicated largely on the fact that we'd made Talking Books free. So it coincided with our 80th anniversary of Talking Books. And really our 2016 submission was around the impact that has had. We've brought in a lot more customers to the library. Well over 10,000 new members have joined in a year. We've expanded the amount of content that we've got in the library. So it really is a case of a lot of momentum, I think.
So that's a massive increase in the amount of subscribers. So how many members does the RNIB Library currently have?
We now have over 42,000.
Okay, that is quite some number. And of those 42,000, how many books on average do people tend to borrow?
Well, we issue over 1.4 million Talking Books a year and well over 110,000 volumes of Braille and giant print. So we're very busy.
That is certainly some undertaking, and in so many different formats as well. It's not just a question of taking a print copy from a publisher and making it available to someone who's popping in. This is quite an operation, isn't it?
Absolutely. We also loan music in Braille and modified stave notation, giant print. We have our digital download service, RNIB Overdrive. You know, a lot of our customers, well over 11,000, are now accessing us online through our online catalogue, RNIB rnib.com and RNIB Overdrive. So we've seen a massive increase in the number of people who are independently accessing our services, you know, with the use of technology.
Again, a massive sea change in the way that the library operates and how many customers you're able to reach with such a fantastic array of books. How many titles did you say you had?
Well over 25,000 talking books, 21,000 Braille, over 6,500 giant print. So yeah.
That is a lot, and growing all the time.
Yeah, growing at a very fast rate of knots. We signed some partnership agreements with HarperCollins and Audible last year that will mean thousands more, especially talking books, will be added to the library over the next year or two.
So that kind of relationship that you're starting to build with commercial ventures, is that something that you feel is a real benefit to the customers who use the RNIB library?
Yes, I mean, last year we increased the amount of stock we added to the library by just under 20% without any increase in expenditure at all through those exciting partnerships and through renegotiating contracts with other publishers. You know, HarperCollins and Audible both give us content for free, which is obviously fantastic and what we would like to happen across the board. But it's true to say that without spending any extra money at all, we're able to, you know, vastly increase the amount of content we can bring to customers. And also the speed of turnaround, simultaneous publications are becoming the norm. When I started at RNIB just over a couple of years ago, we did a handful a year, and now we're doing 10 or so a week, which is just a phenomenal turnaround.
I mean, that even steals a march on a lot of the more traditional libraries who don't necessarily get their copies at the same time as print publications. So actually, it feels that people who are using talking books are actually getting their choice of books before even they reach the library down the road from me.
So absolutely. And it allows our customers to engage in real time with the reading experience. You know, we have a really avid set of followers on our Twitter account at RNIB Library and through Facebook. So, you know, we can highlight when a book's been added to the library, and within a few minutes, you know, people can download it or get it the next day as a Daisy CD or on the USB stick, and then they can tweet about it. And, you know, it's far more interactive and experience rather than, you know, having to wait for months or years or, you know, never to get your particular title in your particular format.
It is amazing to see things are changing so rapidly. And is that something that you've had a particular focus on for the library?
Yeah, I mean, that really is our key focus, to get, you know, more content to more people more quickly. You know, it's fantastic that we've got so many people using the library, but there are so many more who could benefit from it. And one of the ways in which we can attract people to the library, aside from the offer being completely free to use, is to make sure that our content is the best it can be, and that all of the titles that people would expect us to have, that we have. And also, there's a broader choice. You know, we still do a lot of our own recordings of titles that would never make it into the commercial market. So, you know, that breadth of the collection, as well as the sheer number of titles that we have, is one of our, you know, strongest selling points.
If a customer, if a member of the RNIB library was requesting a book that was a little bit niche interest, yes, left field, niche interest, how quickly are you able to turn around getting those books to your customers?
Well, I mean, if they're in print, you know, it can be a fairly swift turnaround. We do take forward, you know, a great number of customer requests. We have a stock selection team that meets every month. And the first thing we do is review the list of requests that people have given us. And well over 50, nearly 60% of the requests that we get put into production, you know. So we do actively, you know, that's the most important focus we have for that particular team, turning those customer requests around as quickly as we possibly can.
Which must set up a fantastic relationship for customers. If they see that you're reacting, they're more likely to come back to you for their next title.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we need to be responsive to our customers in the way in which we deliver our services, but also in the way that we develop our content. What our customers say means a great deal to us. And, you know, we try to be led by the feedback that we get and the suggestions that they make.
And all of this has obviously led to a second nomination. Do you know anything about the judges and what they're looking for?
The awards are organised by a publication called The Bookseller, which is the kind of national industry publication, and yes, you can have a look on their website to see who else has been nominated in which category and who the judges are, you know. And it's difficult to say what they will be focused on, but we will soon find out. The award ceremony is on the 8th of May, so we've not too long to wait. And there are lots of other, you know, important and excellent libraries on the shortlist, mostly from the public library sector. We're the only charitable and accessible library that's on there, which hopefully will count for a lot. But we'll wait and see.
So the competition is a very different proposition, really, isn't it? What's your edge?
Well, I think it is that accessibility. I mean, one of our challenges is the fact that we don't have a public-facing doorstep on the high street. I mean, I would absolutely love blind and partially sighted people to be able to come to the library and to browse the shelves and to be able to sit down in, you know, comfy sofas and read their, you know, favourite book. But, you know, we just don't have that facility, so all of our customer conversations happen over the phone or via email or you know, via our online platforms. So in lots of ways the public library has a bit of a head start on us, and we work in partnership with public libraries across the whole of the UK for that very reason, because they can reach out to customers in a way that we can't. Having said that, you know, in terms of our range of stock, in terms of our understanding of customer needs, you know, I think we can be a lot more focused in what we do and provide, you know, the kind of depth of accessible formats that you would never find on the high street, you would never find in your local library. You know, they do a fantastic job in serving local communities, but in terms of the range of content and the range of formats that we provide to people's, literally to people's doorsteps, you know, it's posted directly to people's homes. You know, I do think that is our unique selling point.
Well, I can't do anything other than wish you absolutely the very best of luck for the 8th of May. Will you be going to the award ceremony?
I hope so, yes. Yeah, polish my tiara.
Good luck for it. I'm sure that it'll be a fantastic night, whatever the outcome.
Thank you.
And really a brilliant achievement, and really helps to raise the profile of the RNIB Library.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely for us about profile raising. I mean, it would be nice to have an award to put on the bookshelves at the library, but for me, it's getting the message out there about what it is we do and the difference that we can make. And the more people who know about us, hopefully that means the more blind and partially sighted people who will end up using us. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
No, real pleasure. Thank you very much.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
This April in Sheffield, there's an auction which has a little bit of a difference. It's been put together by 12-year-old Freddie Cannell, and it's in order to raise money for guide dogs. Freddie, welcome to the Weekly Connect.
Thank you.
Can you just tell us a little bit about the auction that's happening? It's not too far away now, is it?
Nope. So it's on the 1st of April. It's going to be in the Sheffield City Hall in the ballroom. We've had all sorts of art donated to do with dogs, and we've got about 60 paintings coming.
That's an impressive amount. Can you tell us a little bit about any of the artists that have been donating work?
So we've had Teddy Baden, Sally Moore, Ruby Keller, Lynn Wilson, Sam Charles, Sarah Gooder, and a few other people.
Quite an impressive list of artists.
Yes, we've got a good variety.
How did you go about approaching the artists and asking them to donate pieces for you?
So we just sent out a few emails. But then I think these artists have been speaking, like telling other artists or something, and they've found out. And then we've just had like loads of artists just like emailing us saying we'd like to help.
That's fantastic. And where are you keeping it all before the auction?
It's all in our house. You can also find some in John Lewis in Sheffield City Centre.
Are they hosting some of the pieces for you in advance?
Yep. It's all on the wall in the cafe.
Where did the idea of holding an art auction come from?
So we thought we needed to find another way to fundraise, and we thought this would be a great idea because we'd had one before which had gone quite well. So we thought, why not like do it again but bring a theme into it? So so that's what we did.
For a 12-year-old, you have quite a long history, actually, of fundraising, and you started, I believe, 5 or 6 years ago?
Yeah, I started when I was about 4, when I first started with guide dogs.
So what did you do when you were 4?
My mum and dad were looking at doing a Great North Run, and they were looking for a charity to do it with, and then they chose guide dogs. And then I thought, if my parents can do it, why can't I? So I did the mini Great North Run. And then we did another one, and then the Great South Run.
So you've done 3 sponsored runs so far already, and I understand a blindfold drive.
Yeah, so I did a blind drive twice.
Wow, how do they steer? How do you know where you're going? How does that work?
So we have like a person next to us who like is like a learner guide, and then we sit there with a blindfold, so he'll tell us what to do, so like, he'll tell us to shift or steer or accelerate or brake. One of them, I also had the Stig drive me in a Nissan GTR.
That sounds scary and exciting in equal measure.
Yeah, probably hit 120 because just went mad.
Oh my goodness. But also, as well as the runs, as well as the blindfold drive, you've also trekked in the Sahara, I understand.
Yes, I trekked 100 kilometres across the Sahara Desert 3 years ago.
How was that?
It was tough.
What was the toughest thing about it?
Just the dunes every day. It was exciting when you see, like, snakes and stuff. Sometimes it was a bit emotional as well.
How many people were in your group?
There'd have been, like, 20, maybe, in our group.
These are very challenging situations that you're putting yourself in order to raise money. And you've actually been recognised for your fundraising efforts, including having gone to the Houses of Parliament.
Yeah, so my old MP and my new MP both voted me for an award at Parliament. So that was Nick Clegg and Mark Pawsey. So I went down to there and I got the highly commended award at the Houses of Parliament.
And the one that I think is particularly impressive that you've been on the receiving end of is the
Blue Peter Gold Badge. Just for all my fundraising, presenters were impressed with what I'd been doing. So when I went down, I typed up like my whole sort of guide dog journey and gave it to them.
That is something that is really impressive, actually, about the auction that you're conducting. There's a website to go with it. You have all of the art on there. You're obviously doing a huge amount of work to make sure that this is a really successful fundraising attempt.
Yeah.
What is it that makes you want to put that much into it?
I just think it's a great charity and it deserves all the help it can get. I feel inside an achievement. And I just think to myself, that money's going to a person who, without it, would just be inside, not be able to go out on their own and not get the independence that they need.
And you were inspired, I think, by your parents' decision to run for Guide Dogs for the Blind and also that they are puppy walkers.
Yeah, so we all puppy walk. Mm-hmm. We've got a dog called Betty at the moment. We've had 3 puppies, but in total for dogs, we've had about 14.
You're doing this auction to raise money for Guide Dogs for the Blind, but also to raise money for a trip that you're planning to do in August?
Yeah, so we're doing a 150-kilometre bike ride in the Atlas Mountains, and it was actually on the way to the desert where we did our trek, so we stopped there.
And is that what gave you the idea for your bike ride?
Yeah, so I thought I like biking. I love the Atlas Mountains because they're just beautiful. And I thought if I put them together, then it should be fun.
So they're in Morocco, and they're on the edge of the Sahara.
Some are pretty steep. Some are very cliffy. They're not the sort of hills that you get in Sheffield. My dad's coming with me.
Does that mean that your dad needs to do all the cycling as well?
Yeah.
You and he are out training at the weekends, are you?
Yeah, so it's me, him. So we'll be there biking. There'll be a guide biking. There'll be a cook. There'll be a bike mechanic as well.
And that's going to be August this year, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, and how much are you hoping to raise from the auction? Have you given yourself a target for it?
I'm just hoping that we get as much money as we can. I'm not too sure on a target yet. I might have a think.
Give yourself something to aim for.
Yeah.
Have you sold tickets for the event?
The tickets are on sale now. We've also invited the Blue Peter presenters down as well.
Absolutely. The best of luck for the auction, Freddie. So that's on the 1st of April at the Sheffield City Hall. And if people want to have a look at the art that's in the auction, they can go to your website.
www.dogartauction.com.
Freddie, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Good luck with the auction.
Thank you.
Okay, you take care.
Okay, bye.
Now you got 12-year-old Freddie there speaking to Sophia Asif on The Weekly Connect. If you have a story to tell or something you want to share, then do email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk, or you can find us on Twitter at RNIB Radio using the hashtag The Weekly Connect. Now, connecting is exactly what it's all about here at RNIB, and indeed RNIB Connect is trying to get more and more blind and partially sighted people to get together. And that's exactly what they did at a most recent event in Windermere Manor. It was organised by blind man Peter Bennett. We heard from him earlier. Let's now hear from two ladies who attended the event with a number of intentions. One of them was to meet other blind and partially sighted people. The other, to create groups in their own local area. Here's Danielle and Natasha again.
Thank you for taking part in this interview, ladies. Just want to let the listeners know that we're here at Windermere Manor on a Connect Northeast weekend. And Jill and Sue are here on their jollies this weekend, having a great time. Can you just tell us how you heard about the weekend?
Yes, it was in the Blind Society, where we both attend in Sunderland. It was in their newsletter put forward by their rehab officer, I think it was. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. I'm a member of RNIB Connect online anyway. I get the newsletter online anyway. But I thought, I don't know enough about it myself, so I want to find out more about it. Mentioned it to Sue, and we said, yeah, go for it. It's a weekend away, and we'll find out more, and hopefully we get something from it.
I got it from the RNIB newsletter. It was just a one page. Actually came out and told me a bit of information about it, what was happening and how to get there.
Brilliant. So you actually heard about it through our own services?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful.
And are you glad you came?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Good. What's been the best bit so far?
You can say wine tasting.
No, I didn't bother. I was actually. I'm a very sociable person by nature. I get told I talk too much anyway, but the interaction with other people, like-minded people, and find out, it's frustrating because I haven't got anything in the very close vicinity to where I live. I've tried to think about getting things connected to sort it out myself, but it's finding the people, although you know there's people out there in the same position as you, it's getting the connection with those people to say, look, I feel like doing this. How about making a group up and doing this between us and see what we want to do, where we want to go, what we want out of it? Mm-hmm. It's given us the advice and help over the weekend to be able to do that, the information to do that from such as yourselves. But it's also the social side of it, just interacting with other people, but in a environment that's not stressful.
Mm. And what sort of things would you like to be going on in your area? What do you think you'd like to go to more?
Well, I like doing handicrafts. I enjoy crafts. I used to do a lot of knitting and crocheting, which I can't do now because I've got spondylosis of the neck. Mm. But I do like doing things with my hands and learning how to do things. I enjoy doing courses, but unfortunately, because I've got two degrees. Now when you apply for even a simple course, even though it's got nothing to do with where I've studied, my line of study, mm. You're told you're overqualified.
Mm.
So it's something to keep my brain active, but something also to go out and about a little bit with a group of, like, as I say, we've come here this weekend, we're both visually impaired. Sue has got a little bit of sight, so she is my guide.
Mm.
But that's all I need, a little bit of confidence with somebody who has a little bit of sight, and I will go out and about and do things. And therefore, it's the same thing. I'm not a person who wants to sit back and drone on about all the things that's gone on in my life and the problems I've had, because I've had my fair share like everybody else has. I prefer to be happy-go-lucky and just go and enjoy life and make something of life.
And that's really what we've sensed from you, you know, in even just meeting you in the last half hour, that you are really driven and you're not going to sit back, are you?
Yeah.
And do you think that's something positive to come out of this weekend, is you're here listening to other people who are in similar positions to yourself, and that element of peer support, do you think that's helped you at all this weekend?
Well, it has, but I have to be honest and also say that my motto in life has always been, where there's a will, there's a way. And I am very, very down-minded. If I put me mind to something and I want to do something, I will do it. It does give you confidence when you see other people have succeeded in the kind of things that you would like to do.
So if there was somebody listening who's looking at maybe start doing a weekend like this or coming to a weekend like this, what advice would you give them?
Go for it, do it, because if you don't do it, you'll never meet other people and you'll never get out and about. You have to take risks in life, and you don't know what's going to happen when you come to somewhere like this, but it's either that or you sit at home and vegetate.
I think it's also a case of you've come not really knowing what to expect, because this is my first time here, and I think sort of like I've learned a lot of what goes on in other groups, what goes on with yourselves, and how people actually manage their lives. So, yeah, I think you do learn a lot.
Thanks, ladies. Thank you very much. Problem. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you there, Danielle and Natasha. Finding out more there from two ladies who attended the Windermere Manor event about how they can also set up events in their local area. Sounded like a very good weekend indeed. Wish I'd gone. This is The Weekly Connect.
RNIB Connect is a growing community that brings together everyone affected by sight loss. And you can now connect with the community online. Share your thoughts in blogs and discussions and hear great stories from across your community, including friends, families and carers. Best of all, it's free to join. Discuss anything from tech and travel to work and parenting. Your RNIB Connect online community is a space for everyone to share local news and information and bring people with similar experiences together. Your contributions will really help to bring it to life. So, join in the buzz at rnib.org.uk/connect. Or to find out more, speak to your Connect team. Email connect@rnib.org.uk. Or call 0303 1234 555.
This is The Weekly Connect, and before we go, a chance for you to hear our Society of the Week this week. Yes, we didn't forget about our societies, nor would we ever. This week, if you're into music, you'll love this.
Well, my name is Baluji Srivastava, and I was born and brought up in India, and then I came in UK in 83. Before that, I was in France for 2 years. The Baluji Music Foundation is for education, all kinds, vocational training, and at the moment, Inner Vision Orchestra, which is the Orchestra of Blind People, is going under the umbrella of Music Foundation. So we're doing an Inner Vision Orchestra. It consists of all blind people from all over the world. Presently, they are in London, but they can be anywhere in UK or in the world. Because also we are working in India. Hopefully we'll get some money from Unlimited to go to India and perform with Indian blind musicians and bring them here. So that's what we are doing, cross-cultural, cross-musical. When we have to work internationally, we do work musically. We can work online, but we are also involved with the dancers, blind dancers, which will bring them here. We have to do work with them, either there or here. That's why we want to go to India. Hopefully in September, we will go to India and work with dancers. So it's not only music, it's dance or anything blind people do, we would like to do. Basically, it's to give them confidence, because I know there are very good musicians, but they don't have confidence. See, this idea of the Inner Vision came to me, first of all, when I was in Paris. I met a very good sitar player who is probably as good as me, probably better than me, but he doesn't have confidence to go out. And that gave me an idea that we should have a group we should all go out and about and play music. And I told him that, you know, please join us if you want to join us. You're most welcome and we will help you. Those days, I was not aware of the volunteer situations in UK. I was just thinking that independently as we go in India, as we do it in India. But when I came here, UK, I realized that we've got a lot more facilities here. It can be easily done. And also, when I was in London, I could hear music from different taxis, from different kinds of music. And that gave me idea of international inner vision. So it came very slowly, but it is working now since 2008. And I'm very, very happy. Musically, when I was 1.5 years, 2 years old, I could imitate all the hawkers in the street. And I could sing some Bollywood songs, so-called the Bollywood nowadays. Then I was put in a blind school. And before that, I could play harmonium and I could sing some folk songs. And then headmaster was so much interested that he wanted me then and there as a earning source, because I could raise some money for the blind school by singing and playing music. Since age of six, I've been almost out of my family because the school was about 300 miles away, which is in India quite a lot those days. I've got the degree, BA and MA in music, and I have been a musical director for a few things, and I've done some films, documentary films in India. I've been lecturer for 10 years, and after that I came to France, and now I'm in UK. And in UK I've played with wonderful musicians like Paul McCartney, Boy George, Massive Attack, Future Sound of London, Stevie Wonder, and also I played in Paralympics. It's not only for those people who are great musicians, of course, would love to play with them, but also for those people who are not musical and they are interested just to enjoy themselves. So for them and for professional musicians, it's open to everyone. The only criteria is that they got to be blind or partially sighted. Now, the thing is this, that this is a showcase for everyone to know that we can see through our music. And it's a showcase for everyone to see that we are as professional as anybody else, and we should be given fair chance to perform with blind musicians and without blind musicians, with everybody else. So it's to open mind of everybody else, or open their eyes to see what we cannot see or what they cannot see. It's very confusing, but it is. This is it. This is the showcase. There is no age limit. Because we had also, for example, 92 years old woman working with us. And she came, and when she came, joined, she said she's not musical at all. And I said, don't worry, just hold these cymbals and play. And now she plays them everywhere. Nobody asks her, but she plays even in taxis, or she goes in any conference, any music conference, and she just plays. You see, it is interesting because these musicians, they don't come only from different parts of the world. They tell their stories. In UK, we are aware that how comfortable we are here and how different life is in different parts of the world. There is a woman from Iran, for example, Farishteh. She tells us stories from Iran, how difficult it was for blind people. It is for anybody, woman and blind, two difficulties with her in Iran. Here, she feels much more comfortable. She feels much more active. And when she came to us, she could not speak anything. She could not take even her niqab. But now she speaks so loud. She's wonderful. She's absolutely wonderful singer. And she has her own contribution. Ziad, who is the oud player, when I met first time, he said, Balu, how can I go out? It's not possible for me to go out with my instrument. And I said to him that one foot moves, second one has to follow. And that's how you do it. And somehow it affected him so much. Now he travels all over the world. I'm so proud of those people who came and joined us and got such a big confidence. And that's what I'm hoping for everyone all over the world. And their stories are different stories, and we can learn a lot from those stories. But there are also musicians who are classically trained. So we have all kinds of music, Arabic, Indian, Japanese, gospel and blues. We learn from those kinds of music and classical music. So there are very well classical trained, like Victoria, who is from Nigeria. She's a very good opera singer. She sings classical music. She sings folk music. Amelia, who is American, but she sings and plays all kinds of music, and she is a very good percussionist, and so on and so forth. So we have got really cross-cultural, international, all the ingredients you need for music. So please come and join us. And I request all the other blind people or partially sighted people to join InnerVision more and more, because we are doing this residency in Rich Mix, going all over the whole year. Every fortnight we will meet together, we'll discover new projects, new ways of working. It will be all day from 11 to 4. Every fortnight we'll meet in Rich Mix, which is in opposite the Shoreditch High Street station. So that's what I want every blind people to come and meet us. And of course, their friends also welcome to, just to join and listen and see how do we work together. Up to now, we were doing workshop in Outlook, Islington, and hopefully we will continue that. When we'll continue next one, we will let everybody know. And now we will do this workshop, this Rich Mix residency workshops, which we are going to do, which will include all sorts of boroughs, London, or anywhere else they want to come. So mostly, and then we want to do the workshops everywhere. So please, if let us know where do you want us to do the workshops. It's open to everyone. Please to get in touch with us. Go to www.baluji.com or www.balujimusicfoundation.org. And also, you can write email to me directly, baluji@baluji.com. And you can get hold of InnerVision Music, of course, by YouTube or on the website.
That's our Society of the Week, InnerVision Orchestra. Thanks to the guys there for telling us more about that. If you'd like to nominate a society, or perhaps just tell us a story that you think we should be talking about here on The Weekly Connect, then all you got to do is email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Remember, if it's Mondays from 1, it's The Weekly Connect. Thanks for listening.